Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the ASU Sports Business Podcast. This episode is part of a series in collaboration with UNECA, the United Nations Economic Commission for Africa, as we look at how sport can support the inclusive implementation of the AFCFTA. The AFCFTA, which is the African Continental Free Trade Area, launched at the start of 2021, and is the largest single market in the world, comprising of 54 member nations, as Africa looks to continue its economic growth.
In this episode, Dr. Kelly and I produce a roundup of the work we have done to date with the ECA and ATPC. So this is part of our ongoing project around the AFCFTA. And in this podcast, we focused on our second research project that we've done. The first one was, of course, focused on maybe lessons learned from different regions on how sports has been used to help grow economies, provide opportunities. And now the second research topic that we've done delves a little bit deeper into actually how to engage with the youth, looking at countries to see what countries have things in place to best use sports to drive economies. That's quite interesting. So we do touch on that. And like I said, we talk overall about the key findings and recommendations of how the AFCFTA and sports can further coincide with one another to produce more opportunities, to promote, encourage intra-African trade. And just how trade and economies can grow through the use of sports within the AFCFTA. Please do bear in mind that this was recorded in Q1 of last year. I know it has been a while, so some of the references may have occurred already, but you will definitely find key insights from the recommendations and the nature of the work that we have done. It's really good. I must admit, I really did enjoy it as well. There are really good nuggets in this podcast, and Dr. Kelly is really, again, open about the current state of what we've done and what we've gathered from our research. You know, we touched on topics such as your esports, the importance of education, and many, many other things as well. So before the podcast begins, again, if this is your first time listening, welcome. Thank you. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. As always, please do like and subscribe to our podcasts. We produce monthly newsletters as well, which is a roundup of everything that's happened in the Pan-African sports space. So if you aren't subscribed to that already, there will be a link in the description of this podcast. So please do click that link and subscribe so you can get those insights direct to your mailbox. And secondly, or thirdly, we'll be launching our Future Leaders Program, which is a program specifically for, you know, the future generation, the younger generation within the sports business market. We'll help them build their social capital, you know, increase their networks, but also we will have masterclasses from key individuals, from key sports stakeholders such as your FIFA and your CAF. So if you're interested in that or know anyone who is interested in that, please do apply or send that over to them. Applications will close later on this month, so there's still time, but just want to make you aware of that. So enough from me in this introduction. We hope you enjoy the podcast, and we shall see you again soon. Hi, Dr. Kelly. Welcome back. Good to see you again. How's everything going?
Good to see you, Gabriel. Glad to be back. Really excited about getting a chance to dive into the second research report with our stakeholder interviews on the AFCFTA and sports and trade in Africa.
Yeah, love that. Love that. Good to have you back. Good to see you again. So as I mentioned in the beginning, in the introduction, this research project that we've done is the second one, which we have done in partnership with UNECA, which Dr. Kelly has been leading on, and he's been excellent. And this one focused on the inclusive implementation and the role of sports and trade in the AFCFTA towards youth entrepreneurship and consumer engagement. I know it's a long title, but yeah, just to give you a clearer idea of what we focused on and the reason behind that, I guess. And I guess just to start off with that, Kelly, I mean, what was your take? And just to give some context, there were some options that we did have to, you know, maybe look into. But I guess, why did we decide to focus on this area?
I think, you know, when it comes to sports and trade, we had an opportunity to take a deep dive into, you know, different aspects of the marketplace for sport and how it could be a driver for economies of scale on the continent of Africa. You know, we were fortunate. We were able to get 17 different stakeholders in the African continent to work with us. We had experts in cycling, sports sponsorships, football academy experts, sports media experts, African football experts, European football on the continent of Africa experts, to be able to provide context and content on what has worked as far as sport being a driver of business in the economies of scale on the continent. And I think the emerging themes were fantastic, because we saw areas of interest in the manufacturing of sporting goods on the continent of Africa. We saw the impact of government spending on sport in Africa. We saw youth entrepreneurship opportunities. We saw emerging themes in technology and sport on the continent. And then, of course, lastly, we saw initiatives for women in sport in Africa, and also adaptive sport for the Special Olympics on the continent of Africa. So just being able to see all these different opportunities, all these different areas of growth, and just the potential of how sport and trade at the intersection of Africa and the continent and opportunities for the future, it was just very exciting.
Totally agreed. It was good. And I think also, just to touch on that, it's just very key, right? Especially with the focus being on Africa, with Africa being the youngest continent that there is at the moment. And maybe people aren't aware, but Africa, in terms of consumption, they're quite digitally savvy in terms of mobile money and other things that they do have. And we've seen with certain sports and organizations coming in, they are really keen to increase their engagement with consumers across various sports. And obviously we see this in terms of trade and business that does happen on the continent. So no, it was great to do. And yeah, really excited to see certain things play out. And I guess just to touch on a point that you mentioned in terms of the key findings, right? Around sports manufacturing. So for people who maybe weren't aware or didn't attend, we actually held an event, I was going to say last year, but depending when you listen to this, I think September 2021, on sports manufacturing. A reason being is because of this research, we found some of the key findings where there's a huge, huge opportunity in sports manufacturing. And we had some key stakeholders involved to discuss that. But I guess from your perspective, Dr. Kelly, were you surprised that sports manufacturing popped up? And just maybe go into a bit more detail in terms of the opportunities that exist in that area.
Yeah, I mean, from the research, we found that manufacturing of sporting goods on the continent of Africa is an opportunity. It's a place where a lot of sport and trade could find a lot of nuances for business in the future. Mm-hmm. From one of the experts, the African NGO expert in our research, they pointed out that Africa now contributes only 2% of the global manufacturing output, 3% of world trade, and 3% of world GDP. And the fact that Africa doesn't have any sustainable sports manufacturing factories on the continent, you know, or is limited in its ability to produce sporting goods, presents an opportunity that Africa can work to become a manufacturer, retailer, supplier, a part of that blockchain and supply chain for sporting goods. And it's an underutilized market where they are importing a lot of sporting goods, but they're not exporting anything. And so there's an opportunity there to be a part of that supply chain and that value chain with their regional alliances. And the AFCFTA is a framework that could provide a lot of opportunities. And yeah. So when you start to see these emerging themes, these opportunities for the research to show a game plan or options for commerce and trade and how sport can be a driver of this aspect of business, you start to see that, hey, these are missed opportunities that with some careful planning and the AFCFTA serving as a mechanism for communication, that it could be a way to build alliances to build out the value chain for sports manufacturing.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. And also as well, a huge area that the AFCFTA is looking to tackle is obviously trade tariffs and barriers. From the webinar that we held, I did through the research, I don't know if we were surprised, but from our findings, there are huge barriers in place. So it's very difficult for your neighboring countries to transport goods. Maybe you have things in cargo that you need to get between a landlocked country, but the tariffs are so high, so much red paper, that it just, the cost for the organization or individuals trying to get from A to B is just too high. And so we've seen, I mean, just thinking about it, it seems crazy. It's easier to maybe transport outside of the continent, bring it back in, than do intra-country relations or whatnot, regional cooperation. So that's a huge area where the AFCFTA can step in, you know, reduce these trade barriers, make it easier to manufacture, make it easier to, you know, build things across the whole manufacturing process.
Yeah. I think you said it perfectly clear. The bottom line is that there's the lack of regional cooperation at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that it's cheaper to go outside of the continent to have it shipped back in, more so than working with your intra-African regional value chains, is just not really productive. They're not really the most efficient and effective way of maximizing the value chain and the supply chain. And so, you know, building these regional alliances, the AFCFTA offers an opportunity for cooperation, communication, and also collaboration, you know, the three C's. And so it just opens up a lot of opportunities for the building of bridges when it comes to identifying areas of alliances and maximizing these alliances by, you know, limiting the impact of the tariffs and the taxes for regional trade. And so there's a lot of good opportunities here. And I think we've identified, especially throughout our first research project on, you know, lessons learned from Qatar with the FIFA World Cup, and applying how Qatar really has been able to maximize their value chain and understand the need that even though they're not going to be manufacturing sporting goods, they're going to be importing things, that their alliances are vital throughout the Middle East and Northern Africa.
Yeah.
And with the AFCFTA having access to the same types of resources and the same types of impact for sporting goods, they can be as efficient as Qatar was with the preparation for the building of those new stadiums for the FIFA 2022 World Cup.
No, spot on. And another area that we found of interest was the fact that maybe organizations and governments and countries, maybe they don't talk with each other enough or as often as they should to maybe share best practice. As you mentioned from our lessons learned with Qatar, although it is a much smaller state, there was a lot of communication, sharing best practices, coming to a cohesion about a certain plan and putting that into practice. Whereas we've seen, even especially from this research that we've done, looking at, you know, and we'll come onto that in a bit more detail in terms of government input and support, but we've seen certain pockets and certain individual countries doing things and doing things well, and not necessarily that being, you know, transferred to other regions or other nations in terms of best practice, what they can do, especially using sport as a tool for growth and trade, which is what the AFCFTA is all about.
Yeah, I agree. And especially to give an example to that, for a further example, in our research, when it came to the sport of cycling,
yeah,
that was one of our biggest surprises, right? We had many conversations with the stakeholders in the cycling industry in Africa, and countries like Rwanda, Ethiopia, Eritrea, and Nigeria have just embraced the sport of cycling to the point where there's government support and funding to allow the different tours for cycling, as well as the Tour of Rwanda, which has generated millions of dollars for the local economy. Rwanda has been active, for example, in the bidding for the UCI 2025 World Championships, which would be the first cycling world championship to be held in the African continent. And so when you have these types of government-supported endeavors in sport, and it's not just being limited to one country, it's Rwanda, it's Ethiopia, Eritrea, Nigeria, also combining resources and working together to make sure that the bid works, You're seeing that there is a framework, there is a plan that has worked for regional cooperation of different African nations already working together to use sport as a driver for the economies of scale. And so what we're seeing here is that it's working in small pockets on a regional level. And imagine if you can get the 55 member nations to work together, or even to combine 20 different nations to work together towards hosting or supporting each other to make it easier for the economics, for sport and trade to benefit all of the nations in the region. Yeah. And then when you start to get the entire continent together, that's 55 member nations working together. And so just, you know, keeping on the track that the research is kind of is showing what's working and what's not working, is showing where the opportunities were. And between research report number one, which was fantastic and giving us a lay of the land and what was already out there as far as youth development, youth engagement, women in sport, and all the different topics. What we did with research report number two was get practical boots on the ground examples of what's working and not working. And so the first report was more about the theory. Second report was more about the practice. And so it was the research was showing in the first report, you know, the lessons learned from the past. And then the actual research report number two was breaking down a practical examples, boots on the ground, what's working now, what are engagement efforts now in real time in 2020, 2022 that's working towards the benefit of sports and trade on the continent.
Yeah, no, I love that. And even just to, you know, latch onto what you just discussed, what you just mentioned about certain countries, Rwanda, Nigeria, Ethiopia, etc., regarding cycling. I want to touch on the very important role of governments. Now, this is always a huge topic of discussion pertaining to sports, not just sports, but trade in general on the continent. And from one of our participants in the research that we've done, they said something that really stuck out to me. They said, if governments on the African continent can understand the value of sport and what it can deliver in terms of revenue, employment, and the inflow of capital, then they will be able to maximize opportunities for trade, which I think is just spot on. And we've seen, I'm going to use that as a segue now to talk about, you know, Basketball Africa League. At the time of recording, they held their inaugural season in 2021, obviously because of COVID. But I think that was an example of that quote. You know, we've seen obviously the basketball NBA come in, but we've seen governments really latch on and see this as an opportunity for them to invite them into their countries, have teams, have franchisees to build all of that. And now we've seen already the economic value to these certain countries and individuals when it comes to trade and business. So it's been great.
Yeah, the Basketball Africa League has been, it was a very exciting, you know, revelation during our time when we were working on report number two. It was getting a chance to see something that was unfolding right before our eyes as we were doing the research. And so one of the successes of the Basketball Africa League, of course, was the relationship between the U.S.'s National Basketball Association, FIBA, and a lot of the work with Basketball Without Borders and the Junior NBA. So you know, the NBA has had a longstanding 25-30 year relationship with Africa that has led to the establishment of a pipeline and development of talent on the African continent that has gone on from the African continent to find success in the U.S. And one of the major components of the Basketball Africa League is that it's going to develop basketball talent to remain as professionals on the continent, which is going to, of course, increase at the different site locations for the Basketball Africa League opportunities to build up the economies of sports and trade. And so you'll have these clubs that are going to work in their individual countries' leagues, and then the champions will go on to the Basketball Africa League, and they'll fight for to be the real champions of Africa in basketball, I guess, right? But throughout that point of all those games and those tournaments and those professional aspects of sport is that the trade aspect is going to be a major component of it, because now you have the sponsorship dollars that are attached to it. Now you have the marketing dollars. Now you have the endorsement dollars. And now you have an influx of money that was normally leaving Africa is now being invested back onto the continent. And I think that's the key that we want to get across with the research. The major emerging theme is that we are identifying purposes and reasons for foreign investment to invest in the continent of Africa, where before it was more so they were exporting the talent, or people were coming into the continent of Africa and taking away from the continent. Correct. Where now this research is showing that there is a vested reason to invest in the continent. And the National Basketball Association has seen this investment to be vital. And this research is showing how the Basketball Africa League is really reintroducing the continent of Africa to the rest of the world as a viable source for foreign investment, which is fantastic.
Yeah, no, I love that, what you said. I'm just shaking my, I'm just nodding my head in agreement with what you said. You said it there in terms of course, foreign investment. But as you mentioned, you know, keeping, allowing people to believe that, okay, yeah, these dollars are going to stay. And I remember that's something that you mentioned in our first report, like the dollars will stay in Africa, or the pounds or whatever currency you want to use.
Pounds, currency.
It will stay in Africa. And then when that is there and it flows within that ecosystem, there is then more opportunities for trade, providing the services. You can put more things in place to safeguard and keep things in place that we've discussed before. In one of the podcasts that we've done with Beatrice Chaitor, she's a trade services expert from the African Union Commission. She mentioned about creating opportunities and putting things in place to safeguard young talent. So, you know, the free movement of players and athletes, what's enticing someone to move from a Rwanda to a Ethiopia, you know, those kind of things in place. Once trade comes in and you helping to boost and grow an ecosystem, it'll be more enticing for them, less barriers in terms of paperwork for them to move from one country to another country within Africa. Yeah, and it helps to boost the whole economy, which is great. And it's exciting, but it's still a long way to go. But we are on the right steps for that.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said it that way. You know, it's still a long time to go because we've identified it. And I think because the NBA has gone a long way to establishing the legitimacy of investing in the continent, we need more allies to understand that it can't just be the NBA. It has to be other major sporting leagues who are historically have taken talent away from the continent of Africa to also invest in the continent. And yeah. I think, you know, as we get deeper into our conversation, you know, we can talk about FIFA and their work with women in sport and their investment in continental mm-hmm. Africa and how there's a lot more that's happening where the sport community, the sporting world is investing in the continent, but it's not really getting the same accolades or even seen as a tie-in to business as much as it should be.
Yeah.
And that's what we get across, is that sport is an economic driver. And more importantly, that sport can bring publicity, marketing, just an overall positive energy towards investing dollars into the continent.
Yeah.
And it's happening, and it should be shown as African continent being a viable source of income.
No, and it's spot on. I think the conversations that we both have individually and together, and even with our colleagues and partners at UNECA, this is a reason why they wanted to focus on such project, because they understand the power of sports and the pull that it has on the continent, and see the opportunity for those both different worlds to merge in terms of sport and trade. Oftentimes, which is understandable, when you're talking about investment or even governments on the continent, the main focus is on agriculture, raw materials and things like that. But we are here to talk about and let people know, and just to highlight more the opportunities of sports and what that can bring, not just socially, but economically as well. And as you mentioned, I mean, still on the topic of governments, right? Again, we can't underestimate or downplay the importance that governments have in putting things in place to create an ecosystem for things to flourish. And so you mentioned, women in sports, an angle, again, going back to our research that we looked at key aspects and elements that, all of the governments, all of the nations in Africa have towards like women in sports programs, youth entrepreneurship programs, sports tech programs. But we've seen a clear, correlation between organizations that have
plans for women, and obviously sports programs as well. But I want to touch on what you mentioned with FIFA, I guess briefly, about their new women's development program that they have. And it is so refreshing to see those things in place. Unbeknown to many people, CAF have recently started, sorry, as I mentioned FIFA, but this is for CAF. CAF have recently started the CAF Women's Champions League that hasn't been running for a long time. And so this was groundbreaking. It took place in November 2021. And it was groundbreaking. It was fantastic. It was great talent. They had the deals in place and things like that. But Dr. Kelly, I guess, just how important is having a focus for women to get involved in sports, not just involved in sports, but really then upskilling them and making them have a equal seat compared to maybe their male counterparts?
I think that's a great way of putting it, that an organization like FIFA, which is like the epitome of soccer, especially for global soccer, for those of you who are enthusiasts or stakeholders in sport, FIFA has made a tremendous investment into countries like Rwanda, to countries like Kenya, countries like South Africa. For instance, FIFA has identified the South African Football Association as a big focus on growing the sport of soccer for women. And from the building of a pipeline for the youth level to the national level, the FIFA has partnered with the South African Football Association to create opportunities for women to fully embrace and understand the dynamic and impact of soccer. Now, FIFA as a global organization investing in women's soccer shows that they understand the business of women, of women's sports and women as stakeholders in the global economy. And so the launch of the FIFA Women's Football Development Program, it allows women to see financial support to invest in female football and to have a create a strategic plan for club licensing, the training of coaches, and the supporting of grassroots programs. And so this type of investment by an organization like FIFA, think about all the sponsors with FIFA, think about all of the promotional aspects of a relationship of FIFA with the South African Football Association, with programming that is geared towards women. Think about the opportunities for endorsement dollars to come into the athletes who come out of this pipeline and become professional footballers. And so if you look at the pipeline approach and the fact that this investment in a pipeline is happening not only in the sport of basketball with FIBA and the Basketball Africa League and the NBA, but also with FIFA in soccer, as well as the development with the South African Football Association and the impetus of understanding that developing a pipeline grassroots system for women is the start, but also understanding that they're also building out all the other components of the value chain for women's sports.
Yeah.
And so it's not just a one-prong approach. It's like they're building out the entire ecosystem. And so if it's happening in countries like South Africa, it's also happening in a country in Kenya, it's happening in Rwanda, we're starting to see these major themes. These are, progressive African nations that are emphasizing the impact of women in sports development. But FIFA, as an external organization to Africa, is investing on the African continent.
Yeah.
They're bringing dollars into the African economies. And so once again, the theme that we're seeing is foreign investment coming onto the continent of Africa. And then that's the key. Why would FIFA invest in women's sports and soccer? Because they see the development of potential talent to potentially become professionals in the future to help build the FIFA brand. Mm-hmm. And they're investing in the African continent for this to happen.
Yeah, I love that. And another angle as well is getting women in senior leadership positions as well. We've seen even from the research, again, we have Rwanda, obviously with the history of the genocide, which was unfortunate, but they really use that as an opportunity to really give women opportunities and positions leadership. And we've seen that in how they are, they're run as a country, very well organized. And even, of course, in in organizations as well. So it's, I guess, two-pronged in terms of the programs that I run and opportunities within sports, but as well, those senior leadership positions, giving women opportunities to get into those positions and let them use their skills. But yeah, the role of governments, again, it's very important. And we also looked at youth entrepreneurship programs and sport technology programs that certain nations have in place, again, to upskill youth and whatnot, as I mentioned at the beginning, with Africa having the youngest continent in the world. And again, I think the role of tech, you know, esports is something that's a bit more prevalent in the Western world compared to Africa, though it is growing. We do know so that countries have issues with electricity and whatnot, but that space is very much growing. And we've seen even outside of sports, young entrepreneurs using tech as a solution to challenges in, again, in trade, in agriculture, providing these skills to maybe circumvent some barriers that are in place and innovate that market. But again, similar question. What are the correlations between certain governments who have initiatives around youth entrepreneurship and sports technology? And what do you actually see in the fruition of some of, I don't know, these youth in some countries across the continent?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing we're seeing when it comes to youth entrepreneurship was the emergence of an esports community. Yep. You know, throughout different nations in Africa, from Nigeria to South Africa to Rwanda, we're seeing the similar themes of youth taking control of their destiny when it comes to sport. And so with this type of subculture of esports, which is, you know, a growing sport in the US, but internationally it's being seen as a potential professional sport for many aspiring youth. And so this becomes an opportunity for foreign investment. And so countries like Africa, countries like Nigeria, while it's still in the infancy stage as they are working out issues with infrastructure when it comes to host servers and, you know, being able to compete with the international gaming community. What you're seeing is a government investment in supporting esports efforts. You're also seeing private dollars being invested into the different nations of Africa and their esports community in their build outs. And so, yeah. I see for youth entrepreneurship, for technology and sport on the continent of Africa, esport is something to keep your eye on because that becomes an aspect of the future development of infrastructure, the future development of opportunities for foreign investment in Africa, but also with the local economies of scale for the different African nations to invest in youth programming surrounding esports. So yeah. Esports was an emergent theme in our research report. For report number two, with the stakeholders, that was seen as an area for improvement, but also an area that can show a quick return on investment in the near future.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. And I know saying this, and even from our research, there is an ideology around esports as, oh, these guys are just playing computer games. Again, of course, we have to challenge perceptions, but there's a huge opportunity. It's not just playing computer games. There's a huge amount of innovation and technology around that.
Yeah, because there's a natural correlation between the NBA Africa, Basketball Africa League, the FIFA work with the South African Football Association. Yeah. And of course, the NBA having NBA 2K.
Yeah.
And FIFA having the FIFA gaming systems. And so
yeah.
It's a natural correlation to tie in esports to the actual game. And so as the investments are happening by FIFA, by the NBA, it's a natural synergy to bring in the gaming side of it because you're engaging both the students or athletes or the youth who are on the continent.
Yeah.
But you also, this subculture of gaming becomes, as it grows globally into a professional aspect of sport, there's also going to be a community of potential participants, stakeholders, and businesses that can be built out of it on the continent of Africa with this talent type pipeline.
Yeah.
So just opportunities galore at this point and just opportunities for the future.
Yeah, fully. And even talking about youth entrepreneurship programs, this is another reason as well that we ran a mentorship program. It focused on 14 experts within the space of sports across different disciplines, people from media, governance, sports agents, commercial backgrounds, sports technical development, and 14 young entrepreneurs from the continent. We really identified this as an area to really help educate, but also bridge that social capital that may seem to be lacking for young entrepreneurs wanting to know more about sports, not just on the field, but obviously outside of the field. And we ran some programs, well, four programs in particular. Basic understanding around ASCFTA, two around business communication and how to run and organize a business, and the third on innovation as a driver for success, which touched on tech and data to help build out things and solutions. So we really saw, I mean, it's coming to its conclusion now, but we really saw through the programs that we're on, even feedback that we've had with some of the mentees, how beneficial and useful this has been. So implementing such programs in the future at different levels and different scales is really an area of opportunity for organizations and nations to really invest in, to really educate the future leaders of the continent and of, yeah, who'll be creating all these solutions that we have in today's world. And so, yeah, I guess just to like conclude, right, just to round up things, I know we've spoken a lot. It is actually very exciting. Time's gone so quick. But I guess
I think to your point, you know, I do want to expound upon the excitement. I think that's the part that was the best part about this research. You know, we were able to take it in a two-part series with the two research studies. We did an overarching view of lessons learned of what was working in the different nations. We did an exhaustive deep dive into sports development, women in sports, and youth entrepreneurship and mentorship in each of the nations. And then from there, we compared it to Qatar.
Yeah.
And then we did like comparative analysis to understand, you know, how could they benefit and maximize their efficiency and effectiveness, similar to how Qatar was able to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then we went with research report number two, where we took a deep dive into what was actually being done by stakeholders in the communities in these different African nations, from media, from football, to cycling, to, you know, entrepreneurship and what was working. And it was exciting because, you know, we're uncovering different relationships or, you know, different projects or initiatives that probably could have worked, but or if it probably could be used to be generalized to a larger scale because they were so successful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's one of the best things, ways to kind of define this project or these projects, was that it was exciting. It was constantly learning. It was constantly uncovering all these amazing aspects of sport and trade at that intersection of working together to build Africa, the continent.
No, fully. No, it has been fun. And we're looking forward to, you know, just what's in store, you know, in the future. As I mentioned, it's a long way to go, but it's very exciting. The core pillars and foundations are being laid. Just a question to you. Well, I guess we could both answer it, but just a question as we round up, right? In terms of, we've done all this research, all these insights, I guess what like policy recommendations can we extract from the research that we've done that we can maybe use or suggest to governments and how to leverage sports to harness inclusive implementation of the ASCFTA?
Yeah, the biggest one I definitely want to push forward, I think, is manufacturing. Mm-hmm. I think that everything is set for, there's already enough imports coming into Africa. There's already enough sporting goods being brought in or raw materials being brought into the country. The country needs to develop its own manufacturing of sporting goods, manufacturing of goods that can be exported on the back end. Because not only would it impact the cost of what's leaving the country, it's going to open up doors for more investment in the country. And so, especially when it comes to sporting goods, because that was the main identifier that we were able to locate as far as ways to link sport and trade.
Yeah,
I think everything else builds off of it, because once there's a viable value chain and supply chain for sport manufacturing and sporting goods, that's going to impact the relationship with the Basketball Africa League.
Yeah,
that's going to impact the relationship with FIFA. That's going to make it easier to attract other professional sporting federations and leagues to invest in the African nations here. Mm-hmm. And the AFCFTA offers an opportunity for the African nations to negotiate these deals as one entity.
Yeah.
So they can also be very strategic in how it is organized and be very strategic in how they are distributing the resources to the different member nations. And so I believe that sport manufacturing could be the key to sports and trade at this time. Mm-hmm. And then it can leverage off into other industries like esports, like the gaming industry. Yeah. It can leverage off into hosting of mega events by different African nations clustering together, similar to the model that South Africa has done to host the FIFA World Cup and also the Rugby World Cup. And so I think other nations who possibly haven't thought about this can start to plan to bond together with the AFCFTA's support to host mega sporting events. And I think that's the ultimate goal. But I think it starts with sports manufacturing.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I think another area of recommendation will be education. That really can't be overlooked. As I mentioned, especially for, you know, the future generation, we've seen that there are, in terms of like sports specific or maybe trade specific, there could be more. Let's just put it that way. There could be more programs that are running that could be used to help educate the future generation. So once we have more of those and we really put time into maybe educate people on the opportunities outside of becoming a basketball player or playing soccer or football on the field and, you know, educate them in skills that are needed outside of that, then we'll definitely see a more sustainable ecosystem that has a lot more trade going on because people understand their skills and how that can be used and transferred from A to B, etc. So yeah, I think that's definitely one. Yeah, but no, sounds good. Really appreciate your time, Dr. Kelly, for this. It's been great. Yeah, like I said, it's really been fun. And sorry, as I was just talking, just one more question just to throw out to you. If you were to do another research piece, right? Or what further research or work areas would you recommend to work on in the future to continue towards, I guess, creating a bit more of an understanding of the opportunities of how sports can be an inclusive implementation for the AFCFTA?
Yeah, I found that from our research that adaptive sport for athletes with disabilities was an area that we could have built out another study on, because the relationship between the Special Olympics and, you know, different sport federations on the African continent was fantastic. That was probably it's like every African nation either had a sport development arm or they had like a relationship with the Special Olympics. And so that means that right away they have embraced adaptive sports, sport with disabilities, and the Paralympics as a core component of their sport development initiatives, mm-hmm. which to me represent an area of growth and an area of future focus for one of our research reports. And so I think that's an avenue that I would love to explore in the future, to partner with Unica and with you, of course, to get those kind of projects going down the pipeline.
Yeah, fantastic. But yeah, no. Thank you so much, Dr. Kelly. Thanks for your time. It's always good chatting with you. It's, thoroughly enjoyable. And thanks to everyone who's listened. We really hope that you've taken something tangible from this, because there's so many nuggets from the work that we've done and just from the information that we've shared. So thanks, everyone, for listening. Dr. Kelly, appreciate it. And thanks, everyone. And I guess hopefully you join us on the next podcast. Take care and see you all soon.